Welcome to Getting Back to Gwinnett on Business Radio X. I'm your host, Tom Sheldon. We're coming to you live from the Super Gwinnett Studio inside the beautiful Sonesta Gwinnett Place Atlanta Hotel. Now, let's meet some amazing people. Hello, amazing people.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Hello. They're here. Our first guest today, Mr. William Atkins of Marr Incorporated.
How's it going?
It's going well. Can I call you Will or William?
Call me Will.
Call you Will.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was being polite. But also today, we have with us Nina Owen.
Hey, Tom.
Hi, Nina. Now, you are an author, you're a mother, and you're also someone that suicide has touched closely.
That's right. My 20-year-old son died in 2016
by suicide. Gotcha. I tell you what, grab a cup of coffee, and we will be back with you in just a moment. Will, you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's kick it off, man.
Let's kick it off.
All right. Tell us a little bit about Will Atkins before we get into Marr Incorporated.
Sure. So I am a Gwinnett native, born and raised here.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I graduated from North Gwinnett High School. So I've been around here for my whole life, and went into the counseling field and quickly got involved with Marr, and I've really been at Marr for most, if not all, of my career, so it's a special place for me. And outside of that, you know.
What drove you toward being I guess, what is your official title now?
So I'm a licensed professional counselor.
That's what I was looking for, yes.
Yeah, but I'm the director of the Men's Recovery Center.
What drove you to that? Just something you didn't just stumble on it.
I didn't, no. The short version of that is coming at it more from the family side of experience with addiction. Not my direct family, but some really close friends that I consider family, and watching them go through active addiction and all the consequences that come with that, and really not being able to support and help them. I wasn't equipped to do that at the time. And plus, it's just way more complicated when it's someone that's family that you care about and have a connection with on that level to get them help. So I ended up going in that direction in the hopes of helping some other people. Interestingly enough, because it was so close to home initially, my thoughts were, I want to get into helping folks, but not the addiction field.
Right.
I felt like it was just maybe a little too close to home, but circumstances and things just kept pushing me in that direction. And ultimately, I stopped fighting it and leaned into it, and been doing it ever since. And it's just really rewarding work, and I love being able to do it.
Now, you are the director of Men's Recovery.
Correct.
Or the Recovery Center.
Correct.
And so tell us a little bit about Marr, and then we'll start to peel back the layers of Marr.
Sure. So Marr's been around for over 40 years. Have a long track record here of helping folks with addiction. And currently we have our Men's Recovery program that helps adult males with substance abuse issues, as well as some co-occurring mental health issues. We also have our Women's Recovery Center in Lawrenceville. And then we have two government-funded facilities for women with children and pregnant women called our Right Side Up program. Those are in Fulton and DeKalb.
Now, at the Men's Recovery Center, it's community living.
Correct. That's our biggest focus, really, is finding connection in community. And that means a lot of different things, you know, from the smallest being the Marr community for our guys. So two apartments, living together, practicing the principles they're learning in day treatment, how to live a life in recovery. But then doing the normal stuff as well, you know, grocery shopping, cooking meals,
right,
resolving conflict. And then the communities just expand out from there. So you go from the two-apartment community up to Marr on the whole, then the alumni and the people that have been through the program, the local 12-step recovery community being a part of that, and then reintegrating in their other communities of work and family.
So this seems to be long-term.
It is.
Is that important?
Absolutely. So really, with addiction treatment, the longer the better.
Gotcha.
There's a movement in a lot of the programs around towards short-term and insurance-driven care, which serves a purpose. But for us, we find that really the longer you can explore yourself, learn to process your feelings, learn to take care of yourself, and then integrate the principles of your recovery, practice those. The longer you have with that, the more successful people tend to be.
I wrote down in my notes there's three phases.
Correct.
And I think you just touched on those.
Yeah, so the first phase is really group-focused, treatment-heavy. So they're in day treatment, which is basically group therapy throughout the day, presenting assignments, doing things like that. It's more structure. So they're doing that during the day, or they're doing groups in their community in the evenings. So actually in their residence, we go over there and do group therapy with them there. They're going to 12-step meetings. There's a lot of requirements to, you know, that they have to fulfill.
Sure.
In the second phase, they transition to getting part-time work. So they're adding that element into their recovery, but also dropping some of the structure down, having a little more freedom. So they're showing up to work and then coming back to their community just to process through what they're experiencing.
Do you help them find employment? Do you companies?
We do. So we help support them through the job search process and point them in directions. We have a lot of involvement locally with several different businesses that have had experience with hiring more guys or more ladies. And typically once they've had an employee that comes from Mar, they want more because they show up on time, they work hard, they're working on themselves, and they know with them that they're somebody that's sober and in recovery versus the, you know, a random person off the street where they don't really know what their circumstances are. In particular, we have a farmer's market close by where there's a ton of guys that are a part of that facility, both in treatment with us, alumni, and some long-term folks that have continued to work there. So we got a really good relationship with them.
Now, those in recovery, is this just for drug addiction?
So that's our primary focus.
That's your primary.
Correct. But we deal with a lot of co-occurring mental health issues as well. Really, the large majority of folks that come into treatment have something else going on, whether it's depression, anxiety, things like that.
You do deal with depression.
Absolutely. Yep. So that's a common occurrence.
It's so common, but it's so hidden, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of times, the substance use and the issues surrounding that are at the forefront because they're very obvious.
Right.
You see those consequences.
Right.
But you remove the substance, and a lot of times you find underneath some other issues as well, some other struggles. And so we address those, too, because, I mean, they're all interwoven, the mental health issues and the substance use.
I've heard this often, family disease, family disease.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So first off, we view addiction as a disease.
Sure.
First and foremost.
Sure.
So it's something that happens on a physical, mental, spiritual level that changes a person. There's actual ways that the brain chemistry is altered. So it is a disease. They lose the power of choice to be able, once they start drinking or using their substance of choice, consequences are going to happen that they never intended to happen. They're going to become a person they never intended to be.
Right.
In addition to that, family members surrounding that person really want to be helpful for them. They want to do whatever they can to support them, bail them out of these consequences.
Can enabling be a problem?
That's the number one thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Good intentions, trying to help their loved one.
May not even realize it.
Most of the time they don't.
Right.
So they're involved in this enabling process, and really that changes their own personality, their own mental health. Their focus becomes on their loved one rather than taking care of themselves oftentimes. So there's this dynamic and this different dance in the relationship that develops over time. So just treating the individual is a starting point, but you also have to help the family so that these old behaviors and these maladaptive behaviors, you can start to shift and change those too.
I got you.
And, I mean, in addition to that, you obviously got the genetic component too. So typically there's a family history of some kind somewhere in there and all the effects that come with that.
I got you. I've heard a lot about the Mar alumni. You mentioned the Mar alumni.
Yes. So with us being around for as long as we have an incredible, just incredible alumni presence in the area. Here, you know, in the Dunwoody-Doraville area, Lawrenceville area, but even beyond that, you know, we've got folks that have come through our program from other states, and then they reconnect once they go back home. So we got a huge alumni presence in Kentucky and Alabama, all around. But for those that stay local, the alumni host events all year long.
So how do they influence this?
So
they work for you more or less.
So what the way they really impact and help us is they continue to come back to things.
Gotcha.
So they're in some of these groups with the guys. They're again involved with these events and things like that. And for someone early in recovery who's just starting to look at, is this a possibility for me? seeing someone else in recovery, having fun, really looking happy and joyous, that's a huge...
Some mentoring.
Absolutely.
And you're not paying them to be there.
No.
They're there because they want to be there.
And for the guys there initially, they can't fathom that. Right. Why would somebody choose to be here?
Why bother with me?
Exactly. And
that's pretty cool, dude.
Yeah, so it's always... That's one of my favorite things to witness is just that process and the guys that continue coming around and being a part of that MAR family.
I got you. Now, we also touched on the professionals program.
Yeah,
that sounds very important.
It is. So you spoke about the depression not really being visible.
Right.
A lot of times addiction is not as visible when it comes to a professional. So we deal a lot with all kinds of professions, but in particular doctors, nurses, pilots that struggle with their own forms of addiction. And for those people, a lot of times, because they're still able on some level to show up and do their job,
right?
It goes unnoticed for a really long time, and it takes something happening at work typically to be kind of the final straw.
Right.
So a lot of times these folks come into us by way of their employer saying, you know, you got to get help or this job is no longer suited for you, or a licensing board, the FAA. So they send Delta in particular. We have a great relationship with Delta. You know, will send us a pilot to get treatment, to seek help. And as long as they go through our process and follow our recommendations, they're able to return to flying. We're able to help folks get back to their license if they're a doctor, a physician, something along those lines. And so we have specialized groups and treatment for those folks, which involves, you know, reporting back to these boards and then helping them with professional specific issues.
Gotcha. So these things touch a lot of different lives.
100%. It touches all walks of life.
I mean, you think about a Delta captain who, and I'm not picking on Delta captains. I know a few of them. But I'm just saying, I'm just using that as an example, folks. No, but seriously, you look at a pilot. He's a pilot.
He's got it all together.
Yeah. To pick on, I feel bad for saying that.
It's everything. It's everyone. And that's something that we see. I mean, I think pretty much everyone at this point in time has some connection or some touch point to someone that struggles with this.
Not to get real deep into this, has COVID affected y'all? Have you seen craziness?
It has affected us. Initially, when COVID hit, we actually saw a dip in admissions.
Right.
And part of that, I think, was folks with these issues really had more opportunity just to progress in their disease. They're at home, no work, no things to...
Not a lot of accountability.
Exactly. Yeah. So folks, you know, retreated to their homes, progressed in their disease, and we're now seeing, as things start to open up, some of these problems becoming more visible.
Gotcha.
Folks coming in, and that's part of their story. They lost work because of COVID, and that they were left with no opportunities and nothing else to do. And so it has wide-reaching impacts, and it was tough on us, you know, to find ways to continue to build community while keeping people safe.
Right. So how does a normal everyday person like myself help?
Absolutely.
How can we help? How can we help Mar out?
There's several ways. We do family workshops, both for folks that are currently in residence with us as well as just for the community at large. So there's a way for folks, even if they're not directly connected with Mar, they can come and learn about the disease of addiction from the family side of things, just become educated. I think that's a huge piece in how people can help, is become educated in how this shows up. So when you see it, you know what it is, and also how you can help and direct folks towards the help that they need. And we hold a banquet annually in the fall, which is a good place for people to be exposed both to some of the stories of the lives that have been changed at Mar, but also participate in that giving back and helping support Mar on the whole, just for our mission and what we do.
Gotcha. There's got to be a website.
It's marinc.org, marinc.org.
Can people donate on the website?
Yes.
Sweet.
Donation there as well. We're on, you know, Facebook and all the social media things. So as opportunities come up, that's a good way to stay connected to us.
Gotcha. Well, Will, that wasn't so hard, was it?
No, not bad at all.
15-ish minutes.
Perfect.
Nice job, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Stick around. We're going to talk to Nina here in a second. And I don't normally do this with the open mic. I don't do open mics on this podcast. But you are a professional at this. And if there's just something you just need to say, I don't think Nina will be upset if you say it.
Perfect. I'm going to try to leave her space to tell her story, but if something comes up, I'll jump in.
You always got my back, Will.
100%. You're always.
The man. You're the man. Nina, are you still there?
I am still here.
Good. Did you find the coffee?
Not yet.
Yeah, no one ever has. Nina, it's been 5 years.
It has been, yeah. So I have lived in Suwannee and Gwinnett County for almost 21 years. My son Sam was my oldest child. All three of my children went to North Gwinnett High School. Sam was a student at Georgia Tech studying physics, had always been a very high-achieving kid. So when he died by suicide, it was quite a shock. We knew he was struggling with depression, and listening to Will talk here, I wish I'd known about Mar then. I didn't. When Sam first attempted in the fall of 2015, he came home and after a few days told his dad that he had attempted. And he had done that by taking Xanax he bought off the street and drinking a lot of whiskey. He was out of it for a day and a half.
Wow.
So when he told us about that, I'm like, where do you go? Who do you turn to? Mm-hmm. So I called my pediatrician, you know, who?
Right.
And she gave me the name of three local hospitals and said we should get him in for an evaluation. So we chose one and we did that. But because he was over 18, they couldn't share anything with us.
Okay.
He said he was fine, wanted to go back to Tech, couldn't take the time off, would never try that again. So fits and starts. And finally, he saw the director of psychiatry at Georgia Tech. I had to make a lot of movements to get him over there. So the doctor called me and said, you know, I think foremost, the most important thing is for Sam to concentrate on getting well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, absolutely.
So he withdrew, and it was a medical withdrawal. And we ended up putting him at Ridgeview Hospital. And interesting what you were saying about the insurance, because he was there 2 weeks, and that was still $4,000 out of pocket. And, you know, he then went into a partial hospitalization. But, I mean, I'm very regretful that I didn't know anything more about, like, Will's organization.
Since Sam's death, I know you've had a journey to find peace. So you had Sam's death, and then you finished your book. Mm-hmm. Throwing It All Away, that's the name of the book.
Yep.
Can you share anything about that journey?
Yeah. So he died in February 2016, and for a year, all I could do was grieve and cry.
Rightfully
and
so.
I couldn't move, you know, even though I was surrounded by wonderful friends and community that, you know, really helped us, it just was too dark. And then at the beginning of 2017, I was looking through Sam's computer, and I found some documents he had written, journals he kept, and also like some self-reflective papers he'd written for school or essays. And he also documented his drug use. His drug of choice was marijuana, but then he also used LSD. So when I found those documents, I'm like, I need to share this. Mm-hmm. This can help somebody out there. So I'd always wanted to be a writer. My degree's in journalism, so it wasn't anything just, you know, it was hard. It was very hard. It took me 4 years to write the book. But six of the chapters are written by Sam. And I think having his voice in there, talking about his struggles, is really, really important. And part of my healing has been the book. It's not necessarily, people have asked me, you know, is it cathartic to have written the book? It is and it isn't. I mean, now that it's done,
right,
it's good. Right. But while it was being written, I was experiencing that pain over and over and over. And the thing that, Sam was a biophysics major. He wanted to save lives, to find cures. So I like to think by the book, he is saving a life.
Mm-hmm. His own work is in the book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's really great that you shared that with everyone. In my notes, I wrote down, why did you do that? I think it's pretty obvious why you did that.
Yeah. It was also important for me to include his writing verbatim.
Uh-huh.
So nothing...
It is his work.
It is his work, and nothing has changed. And, you know, he's a 20-year-old kid, so he talks like he talks, but it was...
Well, he sounded like a very intelligent young man.
Yeah, very. He was.
First of all, you just said Georgia Tech. I mean, right there, you know, the lights come on, right? When I pick this book up, and I do plan on reading it, what can I expect? I don't know if that's a fair question.
Well... The book.
You can be a mom here. It's all right.
I can be a mom.
You can
okay.
be a mom here.
So the book starts out where it ends up being the day he died, but he was missing. And all of our struggles trying to find him, that feeling of loss. And the book transitions in the middle to talking about Sam and his, you know, who he was and how he was. And that's where the chapters are interspersed with his writing. But I do end on a note of hope, because I think that's important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, I have become more spiritual since Sam died, and that has helped a great deal, just knowing that I will see him again and
absolutely.
That his spirit's in my life.
I think one of the biggest mistakes we all make is we take so much for granted.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tomorrow is not promised.
No. Mm-mm.
You've lived this. You've gone through it. You've written the book. I actually can't wait to read it. You've got to have some pearls of wisdom, some words of wisdom for families, for people dealing with problems. Can you share anything like that with us?
Sure. I would say don't discount anything. I mean, if they're experimenting with pot, there's a reason. For Sam, it was trying to self-medicate his depression. And if they spend a lot of time alone or a lot of time in bed, or, you know, and with COVID, it's only been that much worse. But,
right.
you know, open up a conversation. That's the most important thing you can do. Just don't be a judgy parent. Just say, let's talk about this. Mm-hmm. Let's find an answer. Because... suicide is like the second leading cause of death for people 10 to 34. And that's shocking and awful. And my pearl of wisdom would be, you know, find the very best help you can find, because there are good and bad psychiatrists out there. There are good and bad therapists out there. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't just go with one person recommends and go with that. There's a good fit. You have to look for.
Everybody's different. What works for one may not work for, you know. Yeah. I don't want to end this show on a gloomy note. There's got to be some great memories you've had. I want to know more about Sam, the young man you knew and loved.
Okay, yes. Yeah,
there's got to be some great stories when he was a kid, his favorite food, his favorite movie. You got to share some good things about Sam. You got to.
I will. He's a great kid. He was my only for almost 5 years, and so we spent a lot of time one-on-one.
Right.
He had a passion for animals. And
he loved animals.
Yes. He was a vegetarian for a certain amount of time, and then he's just an empathetic, compassionate person. He would take on other people's feelings. When he was 11, I took him to France on a trip, as an educational trip, and... he loved it. Loved the D-Day beaches and Paris. And I tell this one story in my book how we were being served this beautiful 5-course meal at a French restaurant. And when the dessert came, he loved it so much that he finished it and then licked his plate.
Nice.
And I was humiliated with the tour leader. She was laughing. And I was like, okay, he is still a kid. But to me, Sam was always so mature that, you know, that kind of childlike behavior was like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with him? But he was... he was a very good brother, a very good son, and a very good friend to many people.
Well, Nina, we appreciate you coming in here. I know it can't be easy. Right. Regardless if it may have been 5 years, it still can't be easy.
No, it's not. You know, I like to say that this book didn't heal me from the loss of Sam. I'll never be whole again.
Of course.
But I have two daughters, and I have made the decision to get well, to be with them.
That's right.
So that's
you still have a lot to look forward to.
I do.
And I'm sure they love their mama.
I think they do. They're girls.
You know,
by
I
the
say
way.
That like that, and it, whenever I say that like that, like, oh, well, they're I shouldn't have said that. Like
they're
that.
20 and 18. Yeah, they love me sometimes.
Well, they're, no, they're past that teenage rebellion thing.
Yeah, they're good.
They should be. Will's over here laughing because he was a rebellious teenager too. We all were.
Mm-hmm. Everybody it's, is. It's on part some of level.
Life. It's sure. part of life. NinaOwen.com. We go to the website. What can we buy the book?
You can buy it there. You can buy it on Amazon.
Awesome.
By ebook or paperback format. You can buy it on select Barnes & Noble or BarnesandNobles.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Also Walmart.com.
Gotcha. Offers it. Yeah. Will you personalize any of them?
I will.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Folks, Nina Owen. That's Owen, no S, just Owen. NinaOwen.com. The book is Throwing It All Away, and it, I guess it's a son's suicide and a mother's search for hope.
Right, exactly.
Awesome. Will, you still over there too?
I am. I would just like to...
This lady's pretty strong.
100%. I can't imagine what it's like to go through something like that. And I applaud your courage with sharing your story. That personal touch is so helpful for other people that are struggling, you know, whether it's with their own children, themselves, just knowing that people go through this type of things and come out the other side remaining, you know, okay, is so helpful. So thank you for sharing your story.
Well, thanks, Will. I really appreciate you saying that.
Thank you both for being here. And thank you, folks, for joining us on Giving Back to Gwinnett. There's my music. I knew it'd be there somewhere. I'm Tom Sheldon. You've been listening to Giving Back to Gwinnett on Business Radio X.